Today's episode of Rob Has a Podcast is sponsored by Blue Apron. Start making great tasting home cooked meals from the comfort of your own spy bunker with Blue Apron. For less than the cost of takeout, you can be creating delicious home cooked meals with all the ingredients pre-portioned sent directly to your door with Blue Apron. Try your first three Blue Apron meals for free with our link blueapron.com/Rob. That's three free meals when you sign up with the link blueapron.com/Rob. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, back with another edition in a brand new season of everybody's favorite first podcast of the new week. It's The Wiggle Room with Josh Wiggler.
Check it out.
Josh.
Yes.
Man, I was just doing a really cool wiggle dance. I wish you guys could see it. I'm in like a red bathrobe right now just to paint a picture. And I was just like doing like a really cool, like very sly groove. Just really feeling it out.
A Vince Sly groove?
A Vince Sly groove. Yeah, a Vince Sly groove indeed. Oh, man, Rob, to quote the great man himself and to merge it with Wanda, I'm feeling sad and blue. What
yes.
A, oh, my God. Why do we have to start the Survivor season on such a depressing note? That's my question. That's my big ask.
Yes, that was a big ask of all of us to get through. Again, not everybody as big of a Tony fan as you and I are, but I think that for most of the people that I've spoken to this week, a very depressing way to start off the new year.
It's difficult. We're if you're not team TV, more power to you. You know, you do you, boo boo, but I'm team TV all the way, and so many people I know are team TV, and to only get 2 hours of team TV this season is so sad. But it was great to see Tony for however long we were going to get him. I'm sure we'll get into all of
that. Yeah, we'll get into all of that. Of course, Josh Wiggler's celebrating a birthday this weekend. So happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you. Much appreciate. Did no dishes yesterday to anticipate the question. Ate tons of pizza to anticipate that question.
Yes.
Feeling mildly hungover right now to anticipate that question. And still just, you know, throughout it all, just mostly just struggling to deal with the reality that Tony Vlachos is no longer.
Well, 18 game changers are left. And so for the uninitiated, the new listeners who may have found this podcast this season or maybe over the off season, The Wiggle Room is here where we talk to the great Josh Wiggler of both The Hollywood Reporter and Parade Magazine. Josh, am I leaving anything out?
No, that feels right. I mean, the great feels like an exaggeration, but those are accurate attributions. That's who I work for.
Of course, of post-show recaps,
yes,
also.
Yes.
Co-author of The Evolution Strategy.
Oh my God. Yeah, that thing, which I've started re-listening to a little bit now that we did the chapter 20 re-listen podcast a few weeks ago. I just dove back into Fiji just because. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun to go back.
You have almost as many titles as Danielle DiLorenzo at this point.
I thought you were going to say Daenerys Targaryen.
No. Yeah. No.
I'm so, not a captain of sports. I cannot claim that.
No, not yet.
Yes, not yet. That's my next life.
And what we like to do here is dive into the characters and the overall story and all sorts of the fun stuff. We'll talk a little bit of strategy, but that's not our primary focus
here.
We
slip into that mode every once in a while. But yeah, we're talking story for the most part.
Josh, you had an interview with Jeff Probst that you published a few hours after the premiere episode. Of course, you were on location for the first 3 days of this new season. Is there anything that you could share with the listeners about all that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm just glad we're all on the same page now. I mean, it's really fun to go out there, and it's such a high class complaint, but like, it's tough to sit on that. You know, I want to be able to talk to people about, holy crap, Ciara Easton is the first boot of this season. That's a fairly big deal. I really loved your take on the know-it-alls, Rob, when you talked about, the two titans, you know, like the poster people of the big moves era going down 1 and 2 in this episode. And we didn't, you know, the press was not out there the night that Tony Vlachos got his torch snuffed. but we were out there for Sierra. And it really struck me of, you know, this season is called Game Changers. And the first person voted out of this season is the person who was famous for saying, play the game, change the game. Even if it's not with me, play the game. And that's your first person voted out, was really striking to me. And so I'm glad that that's on the table. And I'm glad that that's a thing we can discuss.
I just do think that coming out of seasons where you have a Sierra and you have Tony, two people who famously made big moves in their season, and then so much of the mantra was, if you want to win this game, you need to make big moves. And I think we saw this play out quite a bit in Millennials versus Gen X, where if you are the person who makes a big move, people then say, oh, well, we have to get rid of that person,
right?
Because that person will win now that they've made a big move. So I do think that we are in the process of this sort of shift where, yes, you need to make big moves to win the game. But everybody who's out there recognizes that once you make big moves, that you are a prime threat to win the game. And they need to then build their resume in true Will Wall fashion and get rid of you. Because if I got rid of the person who made the big move, then I'm the new person who should win the game.
Yeah, I think, from that level, it's really fascinating. But I think just in terms of, you know, taking the long view and like taking the bird's eye view and where are we in Survivor? You and I are the co-authors of The Evolution of Strategy. So we really like to chart the evolution of the game. And I think here we are 34 seasons in, our fourth full-fledged all-star season. And it's called Game Changers. And the first two people knocked out are two of these very, you know, primary front of mind big swinging players from the new school era are the first two people down. It's really fascinating. And I wonder what that looks like when we, you know, when we're at the end of this season, when we're a couple of seasons down the line. What does this moment mean? I think that you could speculate a lot of different possibilities of where we go from here. But I think no matter where we go from here, what we're in the middle of is not nothing. You know, we're in the middle of a moment. And I think that's interesting. I think we're in a fascinating place with Survivor right now.
By the way, Josh, when The Evolution of Strategy Volume 4 comes out, okay, a couple of things that I thought after the premiere.
Yes.
One, we don't need to spend a lot of time coming up with what the chapter title should be for the first part of The Evolution of Strategy Chapter 34.
Sandra, if you had to put a chapter title on these first 3 days, what would you call it?
The unknown.
Wow. Okay, so we have that.
So, but here's the problem. What if Sandra, because that's such an incredible, like, instantly iconic thing to say, what if Sandra writes a book called The Unknown, and then are we plagiarizing if we use it?
Sandra's not writing a book called The Unknown. If Sandra writes a book, it is going to be called...
And the Queen Stays Queen.
Yeah. And the sequel, the highly anticipated sequel, Adios.
Yeah. Anybody But Me could also be a very good title for the Sandra Diaz Twine biography.
Yeah. Or at least like the name of the first part of the book, like part one, Anybody But Me. I feel like, yes. I don't know. There's a lot of different possibilities, but you're right. If we're thinking about it, if we get to season 34, part one, and this is all still fresh in our mind, then of course The Unknown is going to be the name of the
book. Yeah, it definitely will be. There's no question for it. And then spoilers, also, if we ever get some sort of like hardcover or paperback edition of The Evolution of Strategy going, I hope that Jeff Probst would be okay with this being on the book jacket.
Well, no matter how much the game of Survivor evolves, one thing always remains true. Blindsides never go out of style.
Wow. I love that. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's great. That's great.
That'll be on the title for the Evolution Strategy.
Yeah, yeah. Blindsides never go out of style. That's good. I like that. I was also thinking about, even though it's really depressing that we've lost Tony so early into the season, I can't wait for the ghost of Tony Vlachos to haunt Chapter 34. I feel like that's okay. going to be really great.
That'll be very fun. Now, Josh, you also had the chance to sit down and talk with Tony.
It was great. So if you don't know what Rob's talking about, I got to do sort of a Facebook Live live interview for The Hollywood Reporter, where I'm going to be doing some Survivor coverage this season, in addition to everything at Parade. And I got 30 minutes, a 30-minute sit-down with the man, the myth, the legend, Tony Vlachos. We talked about a ton of stuff. We talked about, obviously, the 6 days he played in the game. I tried to bring it back to some of the happier times of Cagayan. He gave us a great play-by-play of what it was like in to live through the "this is huge" moment. I needed this moment. That was really fun. But yeah, Tony's bummed. You know, he got knocked out pretty quickly here, and I think that he feels like he's let a lot of people down, and that's really sad. That's not the place you want Tony Vlachos to be in.
And certainly understandable. But I don't think that there are any fans of Tony's that, like, boy, what, you know, Tony really screwed this up. He really screwed the pooch on this one. He had everything going his way. I think that Tony went out there into a bad situation. He had a big target on his back, and he went full Tony. He did not hedge.
He doubled down. He doubled down on being Tony.
He did not go quietly into the night, Josh.
No, he really didn't. He went full llama within seconds of being on the island, which we had heard whispers of, too. It's like, oh, my God, it sounds like Tony's already gone llama. When we were out on location, we're like, oh, no. So it was like both like, oh, this is going to be great. But also, oh, God, I'm so scared for him. I mean, I walked away from Fiji, you know, praying to the Survivor gods that Tony was going to be fine. But I was a little concerned. I left there a little concerned that Tony might not be long for this season. But it's a shame. I don't think that there's anyone who is a big Team TV fan that is super disappointed in Tony. Was it a great idea to confront Sandra and Troyzan the way that he did? Probably not. And that's really the moment where everything crumbles. And I think that that's a fair thread to pull on if you're going to tug on anything. But that being said, it was so fun to watch. I think that a lot of what Tony was doing seemed like it was working. Otherwise, what he's talking about in terms of coming up with this alliance of threats, it's such a good idea. It goes back to what you've always talked about since, you know, at least the All-Stars chapter of the Evolution of Strategy, Rob, where you talk about that Mogo Mogo tribe. And if you guys could just get your stuff together, Colby, Hatch, Lex, Ethan, Kathy, like if you guys could just solidify, that's the crew we want to see. And that's what Tony's talking about with Aubrey and Malcolm and Sandra and Caleb. And this is the crew that he wants to put together. And that sounds so fun. And it's such a shame that it doesn't work out. I think it comes down to this major mishandling of the situation with Sandra and Troyzan. And I think that Sandra doesn't handle it well on her end either. I think it's kind of a comedy of errors that brings Tony down in the end. Yeah. What are you going to do?
The thing that you need to really get working when you try to bring together this idea that you need an alliance of all of the greats, all of the super friends, is that everybody's ego needs to be in check. I don't know how the Avengers do it, Josh. You know more about the comic books than I do.
Well, I mean, you know, they went to Civil War in Captain America, right?
It happens very quickly. That's only three movies in for the Avengers.
Yeah, they've really come apart already, so it's tough. It's tough to keep all of these big egos in check. You're right.
So it's a tricky thing to figure out. I mean, for the Sandra and Tony alliance, it seemed to last all but 5 minutes.
It was tough. It was short. It was really, really short. You know what was really great was, so when Tony came in, he came into the THR offices in New York City. He braved a snowstorm to come. That was real dedication. And Tony, you know, he walked in, gave me a big hug, instantly was just like, oh, man, I screwed up. And he just, you know, he's really hung up on it. We go through the interview. It's a great interview. We're having a fun time. And there are people who must just be Survivor fans who are working on the same floor. And they start to, like, congregate around the shooting space. There's, like, two or three people. And when the interview is done, they go immediately up to Tony just to be like, we're such big fans of yours. It was so great to see. You have to go back. You have to play again. It was really nice to see Tony getting some love in person from the fans. And I hope he felt that. I hope that he's feeling. I hope that people are being really loud and vocal in their support for Tony, because that man truly is a Survivor unicorn. And, you know, I think he delivered what, you know, we had hoped for, at least in terms of entertainment value. I wish it was a little bit longer, but What are you going
to
do?
Now, Josh, you and I were texting yesterday, getting ready to do the podcast today. You were saying that you thought Cass was very hard on Tony.
She was. And look, that's fine. Cass and Tony have their history. They played together.
Sure.
It did not always work out well between the two of them. So Cass is certainly entitled to that opinion and has certainly earned that opinion through her time with Tony. I feel like Tony deserves some love. I feel like maybe we haven't gotten that on the podcast yet since Tony's demise. You guys were very kind to him on the know-it-alls. Vetus is clearly, you know, a little more centered on what's going on with Sierra and the first boot situation.
Yes.
And Cass is going to drag Tony a little bit. So I'd like to lift Tony up. I would like to, you know, hoist him upon our shoulders and celebrate the King of the Jungle one last time before he sails off into the sunset.
Absolutely. Now, did you feel like that I did a bad job of defending Tony's legacy with Cass?
No, not at all. Not at all. I think just the tone of that's going to be difficult when you don't have a scene partner who's really willing to agree that Tony is a legendary figure in Survivor. He's absolutely a legendary figure in Survivor. There's just no two ways about it.
But the whole thing with that, you know, Cass is going to Cass about Tony. And I'm sure if I spoke with Tony, had he been willing to podcast with me during Survivor Second Chances, you know, if I would have spoken to him around the time that Cass went out, he would have said, see, Rock and Rob, look, this is exactly what I'm talking about with Cass. You know, he would, you know, use Cass going out in the game at that point to say that this proves everything I'm saying about Cass. So, you know, it's like if you were to interview, you know, Batman about the Joker or vice versa. Like, you know where they're coming from. So
that'd be a hell of an interview, by the way. Oh, my God. What an expose.
Yeah, you know, they have very firm worldviews about their arch enemy in the game. And, you know, I felt like that, you know, Cass had a couple of takes, which I did say to her. I think, Cass, this is disqualifying.
That was a really funny moment, the whole thing about the idols. We're like, Cass, hot take. This is a hot take.
Yeah.
That was great.
But I did think that Cass, that's the beauty of talking to these survivors is, you know, they are who they are. And rather than try to change any of their opinions, you know,
I'd
like to, you know, hear from them and get where they're coming from on this stuff. And I really do feel like that. I believe that there is hope for Cass and Tony to end up having, if not a friendly relationship, at least not as an adversarial relationship, if they were ever just to run into each other and talk for 10 minutes.
Hey, listen, if Cass and Trish can make up, like, I feel like this shouldn't be a bridge too far. You know, if Tony and Sarah can be simpatico, you know, from the preseason, they seemed like they were pretty good. Like, this has to be a fence we can mend.
Yeah, I think so.
And they're both great. They're both so classic. You know, let's get these guys together. That'd be a great podcast, The Healing of Tony and Cass. I would listen to that.
Yeah. It should probably happen not on a podcast, because I do think that there is both a little showmanship that comes with being on a podcast. But if they ever ran into each other at like a Hearts of Reality type situation or one of these charity events, I do think that there's hope for them. I mean, if Boston Rob and Lex, after all these years, can, you know, have a beer at these things, then there's hope for Tony and Cass.
Yeah, I think at the very least a photo op, like a really good, like Instagrammable moment. And then, you know, they can move on from there.
Sure.
So that being said, you know, you could imagine Tony gloating over Cass's demise. I feel like, I don't know, you know, the way that Tony has talked about his exit, you know, he's giving full credit to Sandra. He's saying that he's really bummed with the rest of the tribe for going along with it. But most of what he's talking about is really centered on the strength of Sandra as a player. The fact that she was able to convince Malcolm and Aubrey and some of these people to turn on Tony when Tony really feels like these guys wanted to work with him, that they were buying what he was selling in terms of, let's keep each other around. You're going to want to leverage each other later on in the game. When, you know, we're at a smaller number of players and you want to leverage some threats, like, you're going to want me around. I think that that's a very sensible thing that he is saying. And it seemed like it was going over well with some of the people there. But Sandra's able to turn the tide. And Tony has been really effusive, I think, in the credit that he is leveling at Sandra's feet. That, you know, of course you want to, I think, salute the person who slayed you. I think that that's always a good move. But I think that he genuinely believes it. And that to me speaks to the fact that, like, Tony is, He's a nice, sweet dude who has a lot of respect for the people who really respect the game. I thought that that was really great. I think that you could have easily seen the scenario where Tony comes out and is not only like in despair over the fact that he's been voted out of Survivor, but is also bitter about it. And he's showing no bitterness whatsoever. I think he's been a real class act throughout the whole process.
And just for myself, I can say that I can somewhat relate to what Tony is going through, because it is, you know, there is some comfort, I think, in being able to say yes, an alliance of comfort, that to say, yes, I did lose the second time around, but it took one of the all-time greats of the game to get me. It wasn't just anybody who could have, you know, gotten one over on me. It took a two-time winner to be able to get me. For me, you know, at the time that it happened, where I get voted out by Boston Rob and ultimately the winner of the season that I'm playing on in Survivor All-Stars, that, you know, that I, that the, those are that the people that I was out there with, it, you know, according to the back of their baseball card, did not have the legacy that they would go on to have.
Right.
For Tony, it's a little more readily available, those statistics for him.
Yeah. The other thing, too, and I don't know how much of a comfort that is for Tony yet. I think Tony is still in the belly of the beast here, and I think he's got to lick his wounds a little bit.
Sure.
But that being said, I think from our perspective and us, you know, the viewer, the Team TV fan who, you know, now we're licking our wounds. Now we're upset that Tony is gone. I think that the comfort to take in that is exactly what you said. I think it was a title match. I said something along the lines of, like, that was Survivor death match. You know, that was a one-on-one showdown, and it was really kind of epic. You know, it sucks that that has to happen so early in the season, but I think that the way that it was crafted, you know, the laying out the argument of the king versus laying out the argument of the queen, Sandra just has so many quotes in this episode. You know, the whole, I'm here, like that whole moment was so unbelievable. So I think in the presentation of it and the you know, just the status of the vote out as a moment, pretty top tier stuff. Elite Survivor watching, I thought. So kudos to the team for pulling that together. Like, really divining something very entertaining out of something that was incredibly, incredibly tragic.
Yeah, it was a pretty straightforward vote. We didn't have anything going on with idols or really too much with it. It was a little bit of a vote split. But if this was any two players in a regular season, we might say that this was kind of a boring vote here. But just between the fact that it was these two heavyweight icons of Survivor, it was a really fascinating case study.
You know, my colleague Dan Feinberg, I thought, had a really great take about Sandra in this. And, you know, what does Sandra stand to gain from coming back a third time? What are the odds that anyone lets her win? You know, her advantage, and we talked about this during our Heroes versus Villains re-listen, you know, the strength of Sandra is that, like, she's the unknown, you know, going into Heroes versus Villains. People don't really remember her game very well, and she's, you know, really able to if not, you know, I don't know if it's intentionally wield that, but she's able to wield that persona and leverage that into a second win. Now everybody knows who Sandra is, so there's really no hiding for Sandra, who is somebody who, you know, traditionally we think of in like the early stages of the game would be somebody who would struggle, but she goes to the first two tribal councils of this season. She does not acquire a single vote against her, and she organizes a ruthless takedown of Tony Vlachos. So not only is it for Tony, like, you should, you know, at least you're being taken out by such a legend, but for Sandra herself, this is kind of a legendary moment for her, where we don't really think about Sandra very often in terms of successfully pulling votes off against her opponents. Quite the opposite. She tends to ride her opponent all the way toward the top, and that's part of her sales pitch at the end. Yes. So it's a very different look for Sandra. It was a very cool look for Sandra. If you're a Sandra Diaz Twine fan, this episode was awesome. That being said, and just to briefly slip into strategy, I feel like it was a bad move, ultimately. But I think in terms of it being a TV moment, it was pretty remarkable. It was pretty cool to see Queen Sandra in full, like, Heisenberg mode.
Josh, you and I also recently rewatched or re-listened to our 17-hour audiobook about Heroes versus Villains. And we talked so much about Russell in that chapter. How much do you feel like that Sandra was having Russell flashbacks in terms of dealing with Tony, especially at the moment when he confronted her?
Yeah, it probably
does
had
she
to
have
cry.
Some sort of like a post-Hance stress disorder?
Don't we all? Don't we all to some degree? Yeah, it had to cross her mind, I got to imagine. You know, she spent her entire, you know, second tour of Survivor Duty trying to take out Russell and it not working. And now she has the chance to take out a top tier opponent like that, who also happens to have a proclivity for finding idols, who also happens to be bald. I feel like she's got to be thinking about it. But I think that they also got along better than she ever got along with Russell. I don't know. I think that she was really probably not, I don't know. It did not rub her the right way when Tony pounced out in the middle of the night on Sandra and Troyzan. And I think that Sandra, sort of in the way that, you know, Jeff Varner was caught between two alliances in Second Chance in the first few days of that, it feels like Sandra, you know, she can go with the threats or she can go with Varner and Troyzan and those people. And even though the it's a compelling argument for why Sandra should stick with Tony, I think Tony's actions that night are just too repellent in that moment. And she's just not able to pull it together. If logic had won the day, I think that she has to see that going with Tony was the right move. But what are you going to do?
One of the other things about Sandra's character that we keyed in on in a lot of the profiles that we did is that the people that Sandra tends to get along with best are the people that are straight shooters and just tell it like it is.
Yeah.
Where Tony never tells it like it is. Everything is sort of like this circular logic of, oh I'm a cop. I'm a construction worker. No, I was just saying I was a cop because I thought you were thinking I was a construction worker. And Sandra hates that.
Yeah.
That all of the people that she doesn't get along with in Survivor tend to be people that are always like pulling something over. And I think that she really likes people who are direct. And it was just never going to work with Sandra and Tony.
I know. It's like eventually it was going to explode no matter what. Like, you know, if they made it through this vote and they decided to work together, that was never going to be like endgame material. One or the other was going to come after the other at some point. As great as it would be, I mean, to imagine those two in the finals together would be so incredible, but it's also very hard to envision.
Yeah, I know that Russell and Sandra were together for the 39 days in Heroes versus Villains. Perhaps if there was a scenario where they could have started on different tribes and maybe ultimately gotten to a point where they met up at the merge or after a swap, it could have maybe gone a little bit better. Hard to imagine it going worse.
Well, he could have gone first, you know?
Yeah.
He could have been Sierra.
Yes, that is true. How much do you think that Sandra ended up going so hard after Tony out of self-preservation? Do you think that Sandra might have been feeling the heat going into a second tribal council after Sierra goes home? If they're looking at who is the biggest threat, that is the weakest person that's out here. That was something that was talked about with
Sierra.
The weakest
threat, yeah.
I mean, if you are trying to use that as your criteria, I think it's very clear that Sandra is going to be pretty high up on that search.
Yeah, I think so. I also think, though, that Sandra, and this was something that was really clear from being at that first tribal council and getting to watch the full version of how that played out. Like, Sandra's really well regarded within this particular group of people. You know, she's got a lot of friendly faces that she can turn to, at least on the Mana tribe. So I think she's pretty set. I can't imagine that she was feeling too alarmed. I don't think that she was feeling too anxious. One of the things that she said in the preseason is, get me to day 4 and then I'm looking at day 39. She's at day 4 by the time that she's starting to turn on Tony. And I think that probably, you know, that crown is getting a little heavy on that head. Like, I think that she's, you know, really starting to puff up her feathers in that moment and feel like, I'm here. So I may as well just play, you know, balls to the wall. I'm going to get to day 39 at this point. I don't know how afraid she was. I don't know that Sandra Diaz-Twine is somebody who does fear. I don't think that fear and Sandra go together.
I really thought that Sandra was going to go out in the first episode. I really did think that.
In the Tony moment, you thought that she was going to be on the wrong side of that.
Well, both. I thought going into the episode, I felt like that she was in a lot of trouble. And then I thought going into that tribal council, just after all of the talk about how we need to keep the tribe strong, I really thought, especially once they got Michaela involved, I was really surprised by the edit that it was Tony and not Sandra.
Yeah. just sucked.
You know, well, Tony's going to get to another episode.
Yeah, I mean, in either case, it would be awful. You know, you would lose Sandra or you would lose Tony. Or I guess the third option is you would lose Aubrey. So all of the scenarios are terrible.
Yeah, there's no good options here in this season.
It was really bad going into the second tribal council. It's like, no matter how this breaks, it's going to be a loss. I just want all of you to get along, and none of you are doing it, and it's pissing me off.
Josh, let's go back to that first tribal council, because you were there for the tribal council that Ciara got voted off. Now, you were also back there for the tribal council where Vetus went home back in Survivor Second Chances, and that was sort of like famously a really explosive first tribal council. Was the Ciara tribal council much more of a calm affair?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and that was kind of the energy, actually, of the first 3 days of Game Changers that I got to observe. It felt more subdued than Second Chance. You know, Jeff Varner is really the poster child for that, of, you know, being like shot out of a cannon and like just barreling into his second stint on Survivor full tilt. I think that that energy is like seen throughout Second Chance. And I didn't really feel that at Game Changers when I was out there, and certainly not at the Tribal Council. People were really playing things closer to the vest. Everybody is on the same page except for Ciara. So everybody is preserving the same secret. So there was, it was definitely a lot closer. It was definitely a tighter tribal council than the first one that I went in.
Yeah, Josh, we've spent so much time talking about the Mana tribe. Let's get into the Nuku tribe. We saw this battle for the hearts and minds of the Nuku tribe, being waged by the Ozzy and JT side, really versus the Suri side.
Yeah.
How concerned are you for Suri
you mean
right now?
Suri,
right.
How concerned am I for Suri? I think that Suri is probably the first person out of this tribe. Like, if this is the tribe that's going to tribal council instead of Mana in this first episode, I think Suri is going immediately. Don't you think so?
Yeah, I think that Suri was dodging a bullet. Like, because I was rooting for Mana to win the challenge, when then I was like, oh, wait, hold on. If they win, then Suri's going to go home. Really, you know, based on the edit that we were getting, it's either going to be Sandra or Tony going home or Suri going home. You know, it was a really hard to pick a side in the immunity challenge.
Yeah, you don't want any of these people to leave. But, you know, what are you going to do? I think that Suri, you know, it was a kind of an episode of highs and lows for Suri, because I think that we saw a lot of what Suri is so good with in Survivor in this episode, too. Like her conversation with Ty, where she is really able to, you know, figure out that she still has, you know, unhealed wounds with Ozzy. Like, it's not water under the bridge with that guy. And she's able to get that information from Ty, who's volunteering it to a degree. But then Suri really, you know, surgically removes it from Ty's brain. Mm-hmm. That was really incredible and very impressive. I also thought the way that she was talking to someone like Zeke, I thought that that was, you know, a very attractive sales pitch to a guy who's clearly a super fan. And Zeke is also smart enough to, you know, smell what's in the air. And a lot of people don't seem to be in on Suri, so he's not going to get too close to the fire, but he's at least willing to entertain the pitch. What I thought was also fascinating were the whiffs, you know, the swings and the misses on Suri's part, where she's going to Sarah and we're hearing from Sarah like, I don't care. I'm going to play like a criminal this time. You know, I could give you my word, but that's not going to mean anything. And then when she's going to Debbie, and Debbie is really, really not having any of it. And it's a very, very thinly veiled Debbie's, you know, facade of like just putting up with the conversation with Suri.
Yeah, she doesn't trust Suri.
No, she would really.
I don't fully trust Suri.
Yeah, she would really rather not even be in the conversation. I was watching that scene and I thought it was constructed so well, of Suri going to three different people, and you get it from Suri's point of view, her sales pitch as to why we should work together. And then you get the point of view from the person who was on the other side of the conversation, and they are just not buying what Suri is selling. Mm-hmm. And it felt like the opposite version of that scene in Game of Thrones back in like season two. When Tyrion is going to like the advisors in King's Landing, he goes to like Grand Maester Pycelle and Varys and Littlefinger and gives them three different approaches. And that really yields a win for him. And I felt like this was like the mirror universe version of that, where like she's going with three strong sales pitches and none of the people are biting.
That's funny that you mentioned that. I thought you were going to reference, you know, back in Survivor Panama, we talked about when we had the merging of the Lamina and Kasaya tribes. And here comes Terry Dietz from a diminished position trying to, sell ice to Eskimos.
Yeah.
And he's coming to Suri and he's making this pitch of like, hey, why don't you like let us decide who the next votes are going to be?
Then
you
have to make decisions
for the next couple of weeks. And Suri cut to her in confessional, like laughing about what a bad sales pitch this is. And in some ways, I felt like that this was similar, where you have Suri, where I think it's probably not a very well-kept secret that if this tribe goes to a tribal council, that Suri is going to be voted off. And then Suri comes to Debbie and says, hey, Debbie, you need me. And I think that Debbie is sort of in the same way laughing that off. Well, what do I need you for?
Yeah.
You're the person going home. If anything, I think that Suri, she probably needs to be like throwing herself at Debbie of, hey, Debbie, what do you want to have happen? What do you need? Let me be a vote in your pocket, Debbie.
No, it's a good point. But, you know, we've talked about Suri's early game many times, Rob. And I think that, you know, we are both big Suri fans. You know, we love the way she plays and her record speaks for itself. But I think that one of the things that maybe you forget about Suri when you're thinking about sort of like the legend of Suri is that I think that she struggles in the early game. You would think that that's a fairly obvious thing, but I think it's kind of subtle. She really wants things done her way. That is a big part of her story in the early days of Micronesia. That's, you know, it leads to a pretty explosive conversation with Penner and Penner's crew when she really wants to go after Yao and no one is listening to her except for the Amanda and Parvati contingent. She wants to go with the people that are going to do things her way. It ends up being kind of her undoing in Heroes Villains. You know, she only makes it four episodes because she's so emphatic about things happening the way she wants them to happen. And I think we're seeing that again here, where she's trying to, you know, engineer things the way that she wants it to be done rather than going with the flow. That being said, I don't know what flow there is to go with for her on this drive.
Yeah, the flow is going to be voting her out.
Yeah, so she's got to make something happen.
Yeah.
But I think her way of making something happen, I think you're right, would be better to be like, just let me know where to go. But I don't know, that might be just easier said than done with Suri. Suri's in a really tough spot, I think, right now.
And I think she has the right idea. I think that this is better than what she was doing in Heroes versus Villains, where she sort of like was, you know, pounding her fist on the table like, what? We're going to keep Tom and Colby around? Are we crazy? Yeah. What is this? And we're going to vote out Candace? I think I have all the people right that she was upset about.
That sounds right.
Yeah. In this instance, she's going to Debbie and saying to Debbie, like, hey, we need to stick together. We need to, you know, make a move and take out one of the guys. And I think that if Debbie said, well, I want to, you know, not Ozzy, but Brad, I think Suri would be fine with any of that, fine with any of the guys. But I don't know if Suri is really making a case to Debbie about what's in it for Debbie to go with Suri. I think that Debbie is fine to stick with these guys. I don't think that she's really painting a scenario where Debbie is going to get into any sort of a better situation by working with Suri. And I think that that would be the critique I would give her in terms of the sales pitch she's making.
You think that she should be saying, what would Debbie do?
Right. I think she should be saying, like, Debbie, like, I will be in your back pocket. You tell me the name of whoever you want to go for. I will, you know, make it happen. I can get a couple more people. We'll follow your lead. You're the leader, Debbie. You're going to be the head of this alliance, and we'll follow you with your military training and your expertise and all of the things that you had from your first season, because as a great veteran of the game, Debbie, you could take us all the way to the end.
Yeah. That being said, she would have to tolerate being called Suri for 39 days.
There's no way that Debbie thinks that Suri is Shireen from Worlds Apart, right?
I don't know that that's impossible. I don't think that that's off the table.
Like, maybe
Rob,
she didn't even see that season, but she's heard the name. Is that possible?
I think that that's possible. I feel like the way that she views Suri, there is no way she has an accurate scouting report on Suri. You know, she has no sense of who this person is. She is the danger. She is the one who knocks. This is not just some arbitrary person you're talking to at this water well right now.
I know you, Suri. You played with Sierra Dawn Thomas. I'm going to need to get you out of here on the double.
It was a real shame that you went out so early in Second Chance. I voted you back onto the season, and it was a bummer.
So we're worried about Suri, but it looks like that she'll at least have a second life to be able to change the narrative when she ends up going to the Tribes of Six. She could maybe have a Spencer Bledsoe type resurgence where it looks like they're going to be the next person out, but then they end up going to the Tribe of Six and it's a different story.
Yeah, I can't handle Suri being like a target for too much longer. Either just like vote her out in the next episode so I don't have to stress about it for too long, or get her in a good situation here pretty quickly. I hope for the latter, obviously.
Josh, something else from the premiere I wanted to ask you about was the saga of Ty and the chickens again. So here he is, all set up with the chickens, and it's like a Ko-Rong replay, and JT is not having any of this.
Man, really bad sign for JT that his story is Ty's chickens. it's not a good look for JT.
You know, Steven did the same thing. I didn't really think about it in that way.
Well, if you think about, all of the stories that we're getting in this episode, there's certainly some people are more prominent than other in the episode. There's been a lot of Purple Andrea jokes that have been floating around, which are kind of funny. But I think an underreported one is kind of Purple JT. JT going full Steve Chicken Morris, and being obsessed with Ty's chickens is not the story you want from your Survivor Token Jeans winner. You know, one of two former winners now still actively in the game.
Yeah. There was a secret scene, which I always assume, and maybe that I'm dead wrong on this, that the secret scenes are things that were originally in the episode but end up getting cut for time because they're cut just like that. They're going to be in the episode, but they end up in the CBS All Access, where I think that's where all the secret scenes are going to be starting with this season. But there's a scene between JT and Suri talking about their relationship, but I guess it got cut from the episode for whatever reason. So, yeah, it seems like that's not a thing we're focused on. How is JT's relationship with Suri going to impact things?
Yeah, it's more a Suri and Ozzy focus in terms of the rivalry. And JT is kind of Ozzy's, I don't know, he's like his lackey, his sidekick.
Right hand man. But yeah. Josh, I thought this was interesting. This is what JT had to say about Ty and the chickens.
He's got to decide what he's here to do, win $1 million or marry these chickens.
Wait, now Ty's going to marry the chickens?
Oh, my God. And who is it going to be? Probst officiating?
No.
And Sia is going to be leading the wedding band?
No, he gets Stephen Fishback. That's for JT-involved wedding.
Fair enough.
Stephen Fishback is going to officiate that.
Wait, is JT going to marry the chickens? Is that what you're saying?
No. Ty is going to marry the chickens, but I think that JT is at least involved with the wedding. He's the one floating the idea that Ty is going to marry the chickens.
Yeah, JT, wedding planner extraordinaire.
What is he, like Gonzo?
Oh, my God. Maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit. I don't know.
Do we know is Ty in love with the chickens?
I don't know if we think that Ty is in love with the chickens. We know that Ty loves all living creatures, and I guess, I don't know, should he be reining in his chicken instincts, perhaps? I don't know if this is the best look for Ty either, but this is just authentically Ty, I think.
We know back from the evolution of strategy that JT has officially eaten over 1,000 steaks in his life. So this
is a
troubling matchup of the person that eats, steak all the time. And Ty doesn't want anybody to eat the chickens.
Yeah. I wonder how many chickens JT has taken down. You got to imagine. How many is it on the steaks? 1,000 over 1,000?
At least over 1,000 steaks.
Oh, he's got to be like at least 5,000 chickens.
5,000 chickens?
You gotta believe that he's eaten 5,000 chickens pretty easily. Chicken 5,000 for sure. Yeah. Well, I'd like to see him versus Wes Nail at the Chicken 5,000. I feel like that would be good.
The Chicken 5,000 as opposed to the Chicken 50,000 that Sia gave to Ty at the Ko-Rong finale.
That's right. That's a different thing.
All right, so Josh, what's your weekly rundown going to be now with this season between everything that you're writing?
All right. So, I'm still doing exit interviews those are going to be posted up every Thursday morning on parade.com. I'm also going to be doing more coverage for THR, the occasional interview here and there. I don't know that we're going to be doing a Facebook Live every week. We'll definitely do one for the finale. And let's see how many others we get along the way here. But we will be doing some weekly coverage there. Like I said, Dan Feinberg, he's doing recaps on THR.com/survivor.
I love Dan Feinberg.
He's the best. He's a great guy. His recaps were really, really great. Mm-hmm. And we're also going to have some weekly Jeff Probst action.
Whoa.
Step aside, Dalton Ross. I'm coming for the crown. No, you
and
can have
the
Jeff
queen
as well.
Is still the queen.
No, we're gonna have some weekly Jeff Probst stuff going on THR as well, which I'm really excited about. We had a big long form interview that posted after the episode this past week. They're not gonna be as long form as that moving forward. I think that they're gonna be more focused on the eliminated contestant. So it's gonna be fun. I have yet to see what that looks like, so I will find that out this week as well, alongside everybody else. But I'm excited for it. I think it's gonna be really fun to get. Always good to hear what Jeff has on his mind. So the more that he's willing to open up about Survivor, I think the better for all of us.
Josh, can you settle what Brett Culpepper was talking about when he was referring to the goat that he saw?
Listen. I think to kill a goat, we'd have to kill Ty.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think that that's a dig at Ty being a goat. I think that that's a sophisticated joke. And I think Brad is a smarter guy than he gets credit for. I don't think that that's the level of sophistication in his sense of humor.
Okay.
You know, I don't think so. I think that Brad was saying, you know, Ty loves animals. We'd have to kill Ty before we could kill animals.
Have you been living your life this week asking the question WWMD?
What would Monica do? I really hope that Brad makes it to the merge only so that he can name the tribe Monica. I feel like there's a really easy in.
I love our new tribe name.
I feel like, you know, we've already got the Mana tribe. You've got Nuku. You could combine those two. It'd be Manuku. And then you could very quickly translate that to Monica. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. And then he can ask the tribe all the time, what's best for Monica right
now? Yeah. Listen, if it doesn't happen on this season, future survivors, please take note. Name your merge tribe Monica. That would be the greatest treat for everybody involved.
Yeah, I had said on Twitter the other night of what would Monica do, ironically, was started by Monica asking herself that question all the time in Survivor Blood versus Water.
Yeah, it's true. Oh, my God.
What's best for Monica?
Yeah, I think that, listen, if Brad is able to stick around for a little while and just give us confessionals in, like, the third person thinking that he is Monica, and we get a third Personica sequel, then we really have gotten everything that we could ever ask for from Brad Culpepper.
What's the hype level for a Brad Culpepper family visit where Monica Culpepper comes out? Would you be interested in seeing that?
I'd be pretty hyped. I'd be pretty hyped to see that. I would be very, very pleased with that. That sounds like great television. I want that on my screen.
That's the only chance that we have for a significant other survivor, right? Sierra is the only other Blood versus Water, and she's out.
If JT gets that far, then Fishback could come out.
Is Fishback the loved one?
Yeah. You know, maybe he's holding out on us.
Oh, maybe. Maybe. I don't know what he was doing. It was over the summer. We lose track of him then, so he could have done it.
I feel like HB is honorary survivor, so
yes.
if Suri makes the family visit,
oh, certainly,
and we get HB.
Yeah, we have some chance for some famous loved ones to return, but I think that's the only chance we have for a honest-to-goodness survivor to come back out.
Off the top of my head.
Pull the Farm Guy 69 right. move.
Yeah, and all due respect to Dale, but give me, you know, the Monica return is really where I'm at. Like, that would be the cream of the crop. That would be the best family visit ever.
Okay, Josh, do you have a hashtag for today?
Chicken 5000,
damn. Chicken 5000, that's great. Yeah. All right. And so what we will be doing here is that on Mondays, you'll hear from Josh, you know, barring anything that comes up in Josh's schedule. But if we ever have a week where we're going to miss Josh, we'll figure out some other way to fill the time. So we will always be having some Monday version of a podcast. And more often than not, that's going to be here with Josh in the Wiggle Room. Of course, you could follow the great Josh Wiggler on Twitter. He is at Round Howard.
That's me.
And of course, Josh and I are bringing you our weekly recaps of The Walking Dead over on Post Show Recaps. Only 3 episodes are left in season 7, Josh. Can you believe it?
I can, and I'm okay with it. I'm all right with it. I will miss the podcast dearly. I will be okay when Walking Dead wraps up season 7, though.
Okay, well, if you want to hear more on that, go to postshowrecaps.com. Josh, always a pleasure, and I'll talk to you next week.
All right, man. Looking forward to it.
Take care, everybody.